What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Pickleball Connection podcast. I'm Danae.
And I'm Barrett.
And we're stoked to be hanging out with you guys today. We're going to be doing an episode that we call CTN or Cruise the News. This is where we give you the latest pickleball news, juicy topics, and we just kind of chat about them. So let's just go right into it. What's our first topic for the day?
Yeah, so first one, there's an article kind of blog post style that was posted on thedinkpickleball.com. We'll link it in the description of the video. But I just kind of wanted to get your feedback on this. And basically, what it talks about is six questions to ask your pickleball partner before each match. So I thought this was pretty interesting. I kind of want to read the questions. I'm going to read all six of them.
Okay.
And then I want to know, are these things that you talk to your partner about? Do you think that you should implement these? And maybe what would be the benefit? Or maybe do you feel like these are pointless? So the six questions from this article. Number one, you should be talking to your partner before the match about where are we returning? Where are we returning the ball? Who are we returning it to? Vice versa. Number two, where are we hitting our thirds? Number three, who are we attacking in transition? Number four, what's our dink pattern? Number five, what 1-2 combos do we want to put together? And number six, where are we sitting on counters? So, first question, out of these six questions, are these things that you talk to your partner about pre-match, or do you go through any of these?
I mean, that was a lot. I'm trying to even remember all of them.
Where are we returning?
But I think when we do tournaments, or when I do tournaments with somebody, like, these are definitely some of the topics I talk about. Like, for example, you know what? Now that I think about it, some of it doesn't even happen before the match.
Right. Like,
kind of go into it sometimes with an idea, but you know, a lot of times in a match, I'll kind of notice, oh, I like returning to this player more because I like the ball that they give me more. For example, like if somebody gives like a really slicey ball that sits up high, that's kind of a good person to return to because you can rip a forehand off of their return.
Right.
But you don't know that till you're in the game, I feel like, for the most part.
That's true. I thought that was interesting about this, that these are all like, they kind of state these six questions as being pre-match questions.
Yeah.
And I've noticed, like, you and I the other day, we were playing a lefty and righty who both have really good forehands. And so I think in the match, we like kind of said to each other, maybe let's try to return, like normally we return middle, but maybe let's try to return to the sidelines because that would put the ball basically find their backhands. But that's something that we didn't talk about before the match. But I've seen you and I kind of, and then you brought up something else about, I think you often communicate where to return the ball if we're like unwinding the stack.
Yeah, I never like to go cross court because then it puts the person running in danger.
Right. So like if you're like unwinding, if you're stacking, for those of you that are listening, stack that don't know, stacking is when, you know, one player plays one side of the court. So you kind of serve the ball and then you slide over. Or if you're returning the ball, you return the ball and then you run to the opposite side. So in that case, kind of communicating where the return's going because you're having to run a further distance to the to the kitchen, and you kind of know where that ball is going to be. But yeah, I don't know. What about where are you hitting your thirds? Is that something where you typically want to hit your thirds to the weaker player? Do you want to hit your thirds? I guess it depends on if you're driving or dropping, but like what would you say Do you ever have, whether it be before the match or in the match?
I really don't talk about it before the match. Again, I think it's something you have to see. For example, and a lot of it for my point of view is I don't want to respond to what they're doing a lot of the times. I want to be in control of the point. So I'll look at my angles and what I have available, and I usually try to make a decision based off that. I think it's kind of silly to be like, all of our thirds need to go here. Now, I do think there's a difference if you're playing a team that poaches a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I think there's some communication that you can talk about, but I don't know. I can never think of a time where I, before a match, I'm like, okay, all of our thirds are going here.
I mean, this did kind of make me think, do you think it would be beneficial, like, for you if I told you, hey, I'm going to be hitting my thirds. I mean, it doesn't have to be that way, but I'm going to try to hit the majority of my thirds cross court to the male's backhand, like, would that be helpful for you to know? Or I'm going to try to drive the majority of the balls to the female or to the left. Like, is that helpful for you?
Yes and no, because I can know ahead of time exactly what you're trying to do. So I can, again, feel like I'm a step ahead. You have to remember the game is angles, right? So if you have an idea of where the ball's going, you also have an idea of the potential angles that could happen as a result of it. So yes and no. I know that there's sometimes where I'll sign behind my back, like, for example, if we're switching, but I'll also sign if I want the return to go to a certain person.
Right.
So that's an example of in the game, like, hey, I want you to return over here. I'm expecting the return to go here because I'm trying to set something up.
Yeah, that's why out of these six questions, I thought, where are we returning? I thought that the first one is kind of the one I would say we probably talk about the most. But I don't know, maybe we could, when we go out next time, like, experiment with, like, hey, I'm going to be hitting the majority of my thirds to this person or to this side of the court and see, I don't know, like, maybe, like you said, angles, maybe for anticipation, or maybe if you knew I was driving middle, with most of my thirds, you could be sitting on that, like, shake and bake counter. I don't know. Just kind of interesting.
Yeah. I think, you know, at the end of the day, this is a really good probably checklist to go through if you're playing with a tournament partner and if you're going into a tournament, you know. I think at the same time, pickleball, in my mind, especially when you get to a higher level, the team that wins typically is going to be the team that adjusts quicker and creates more chaos for the other team. So, you know, you can go in with a plan, but I think having the fluidity to change as the game progresses and change as the team responds, I think that's really vital for the game.
Right, right. I thought this one was interesting too. The next one, who are we attacking in transition? So what they're meaning by this is, let's say the other team is hitting their thirds. You and your partner are at the kitchen trying to keep them back. And maybe they're both progressing forward at the same time. Is there one person that you want those attacks, that pressure to stay on?
This is where I would say if you have a poaching team, to hit to the person that poaches.
Right. Or I've heard it said, maybe, as you know, if both players are relatively consistent at getting the ball back, then maybe hit to the better or bigger threat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because then it keeps more pressure on them. They have to work harder and they don't have that risk of poaching. Now, if the player is clearly weaker to where they're more likely to make an error, then maybe you hit to the weaker player in that instance. But yes, mm-hmm. I think that that's an interesting thing to think about. Would it help for us to be on the same page knowing, hey, this is who we're attacking in transition? Like, let's say they're running forward and I'm really trying to keep them back, so I'm just going to rip the ball and try to hit it through their body and kind of create offense. Who's that ball going to? Maybe that does help you sit on a counter or something like that. I don't know. I've never really talked to you about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've talked to a partner about that mm-hmm. before. And then these other ones, what's our dink pattern?
I do think we talk about this sometimes, at least in tournaments. I've definitely talked about this. Like, you know, hey, like, especially if you're playing, in my opinion, people that have better dinks than you, this is like a little hack. Dink middle. You will literally neutralize angles from them if you start dinking middle. And so there's times where I've said that in a game where I'm like, you know, they have really good angles. Let's hammer the middle, and we've adjusted.
Yeah. I think also, obviously the benefit to that too is if they're going to attack, if you're dinking middle, they're probably going to be attacking middle because if they try to attack from the middle towards the sidelines, that ball's potentially going out. If you give them that dink out wide, then they can attack middle, they can attack down the line.
They have so many angles.
But yeah, I think that's a big one. Or even like, I think we've at times, like I remember a couple tournaments ago, we were playing, I think, a lefty or something and like with no backhand. And so the idea was like, let's keep peppering that mm-hmm. weakness. Let's get in that pattern where you're exposing a weakness. But yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I think that's something we've definitely talked about. But again, I don't know that that's something that we really establish pre-match. I think that's something that we kind of adjust to in the match.
Yeah.
These last two, I don't know that I've ever talked to anyone about these, but what 1-2 or what combo of 1-2s do we want to put together?
It's interesting because I know that in my head. Right. I know my combos that I like, mm-hmm. but I've never communicated that to my partner.
Right. So like what this could look like is if I get a ball to my backhand side and I want to speed the ball up, I'm like aiming at the person in front of me's backhand, and then I'm going to slide and try to get and come cover the next shot with my forehand. So kind of these patterns that you create, these 1-2 combos of like a speed up followed by a counter to their counter. But yeah, I guess that might help from like you knowing what I'm trying to do. But like, I feel like you said, it's more important to know those for yourself.
That's what I think.
I guess unless you really, you know, when I first started learning pickleball, I started learning never attack cross court. Now, I think I've heard you say like you still kind of a big believer in that. And I agree for the most part, but I think at the higher level, I'm starting to see more and more as I watch the professional matches that people are attacking cross court. And I think, and maybe that's where this comes in. Maybe there's some sort of person that's like, hey, I'm just like, I'm turning to my partner and just so you know, I really think I know where to attack on the person that's playing in front of you. So just be ready for that ball to come back. That kind of 1-2 combo where I'm going to create a pop-up from them and then you're going to be sitting on the counter. So maybe that's an instance. I think I'm seeing that more in pickleball. But yeah, that's something I've never really talked about mm-mm. with somebody. And I don't know, unless you're in a very unique situation, if that's that important to talk about. But I do think it's important for you personally.
I think, yeah. And I will say I have heard the pros talk about setting up play type scenarios. So I know people are doing it at a high level. Maybe that is something to explore. But I personally have never.
Yeah. And then the last one, where are we sitting on counters? Kind of what we were talking about. I didn't really understand this one that much, but this question of like, I don't know that I would ever ask you, like, hey, just so you know, I'm going to be, I guess the only way I could see this is like, maybe you're going to be sliding and you're kind of like people that slide to the backhand and they kind of use the sideline as a buffer. Like, I don't really have to play. So maybe you would tell me, hey, I'm going to slide on all these shots. And that way I know to come over more to cover with the forehand, because you really want to slide to defend everything with your backhand and then just let the forehand be out. Maybe that would be a case, but that's not one that I really talk about. Again, I think these last two are much more intricate, kind mm-hmm. of like higher level potential strategies. But yeah, if you guys are interested in this, first off, let us know in the comments, are there any things that you found that's helpful to talk to your partner about pre-match? Or maybe are you just kind of like an in-game strategy person, or maybe you're not a strategy person at all. But we'll link this, this article from thedinkpickleball.com. And you guys can go check it out if you want to refer to this, kind of have, you know, some tools to communicate with your partner before the match. But that's all I got on that one. Should we move to the next one?
Let's go to the next one.
Okay, cool. Hey, by the way, I did want to ask you, Selkirk just released the new Vanguard Pro. What'd you think of it?
So what's cool about that paddle is it's made with 4 layers of 12K carbon fiber. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but most paddles are actually only made with 2 of those layers. And what those layers do is they increase the durability of the paddle over time. So most pickleball paddles actually deteriorate and they don't play how they were manufactured to play with longevity. What this paddle has accomplished is the fact that it has four of those layers, so it has twice the durability of most other pickleball paddles on the market.
Dang, that's sick. I love that. Hey guys, if you guys are interested in the Vanguard Pro, be sure to head on over to selkirk.com to get yours today. So for our next one, we're going to kind of change gears a little bit here. There's been some more controversy in pickleball, shocker, about rules and rule changes. And I know that we were watching the event a couple weeks ago. I don't remember.
New York City.
Yeah, we were watching the New York
MLP
event. That's right. And there was this match that many of you probably saw. If not, I'll kind of recap it for you. But basically, there were two pro men's players, Will Howes and Colin Johns, and they were going back and forth on like these serves that just looked super illegal. And
so can I interject really quick?
Yeah.
Just to give you guys a heads up, PPA and MLP have different serving rules, okay? So MLP's serving rules are very different than PPA. So that's part of like...
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with this. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. So basically, Will's serve, I pointed it out to you, you know, and Will's serve, he's tossing the ball up really high. It's questionable. Is it low to high? And Colin starts to get really upset. And so Colin just starts doing these absurd serves and like the ball's like getting contacted super high and you can hear it in the crowd and it's just creating this kind of really interesting, like it was honestly kind of funny to watch. Like, and there were moments in this tournament where Will's serve was challenged multiple times. And in one case it was challenged and actually ruled in his favor. Like, oh, it was a legal serve. And then Colin had one called on him that was an illegal serve. And so it's just kind of this big mess. But what we wanted to talk about, exactly what you're bringing up, is that there's this post. We'll link this in the description as well. But there's this post from Courtney Johnson. Courtney Johnson is the head referee for Major League Pickleball. And she kind of goes over some of the differences and kind of there are differences between Major League Pickleball and the PPA Tour. And in Major League Pickleball, you can throw the ball up. You don't have to just drop
it. You could literally throw it up as high as you want.
There also is no rule that the ball has to be contacted below your waist.
Which is a rule for the PPA.
In the PPA's rules, you can't throw the ball up. The ball can only move like a normal length up, like they call it natural lift. At first it was like there can be no lift. And then they realized, PPA Tour realized that when people are releasing this ball, there's kind of this natural lift that comes up out of their hand, and that's okay now. But in MLP, you can throw the ball up as high as you want. You can make contact wherever you want, whether it be above your waist, at your chest. The only thing is you must swing from a low to high motion, and the tip of the paddle must be below your wrist at contact. You can't have the tip of the paddle above the wrist. So these two pro players were crossing the line like about as close as you could get it. And it was just this mess. But I bring this up because, you know, with there being two separate tours, the MLP and the PPA, and them having different rules regarding the serve, do you think this is a good thing for pickleball?
I think it's confusing for the professionals. And I also think it's confusing for amateurs now, because I don't know about you, but I'm getting like lots of questions even from my Instagram and stuff of people literally just not sure what's the serve rule. And it's crazy. It's changed so many times. And the problem is, you know, it's hard because if you're not in like us, we're fanatics. Obviously, we watch all the pro stuff. We're really in the sport. But if you're just an amateur, you're hearing multiple things of what's acceptable for a serve. And I think that's really confusing for everybody. So, you know, I don't think it's good to really have different rules across the board. But then again, MLP has different scoring. MLP has different, a lot of things. So
that is true. It may maybe because of the different scoring, there's some sort of reasoning that it's okay to have your serve as more of a weapon. because then it maybe would create games that aren't quite as close. Because for a while, those games in MLP are just, they're all super close. Mm-hmm. And I did notice in this, in the New York event, there were many games that were more blowouts than previous MLPs. I don't know if that has a relation to the serve rules or not, but it is confusing. And just like we talked about in a previous podcast, there's two governing bodies in pickleball as well that have different paddle regulations. So now people that are coming into pickleball, I hate this for them because it's like at rec play, which governing body do we abide by for what's a legal paddle? Which tour do we abide by for what's a legal serve? And it kind of just creates this kind of ambiguity. And I think it does make it a little confusing for, you know, newcomers. I mean, I think the only knock, if I was going to make one knock on pickleball, I love the sport. I'm addicted. I'm obviously on a pickleball podcast right now. We work in pickleball full time. But I have noticed we've put out a video. If you guys don't know, we put out a weekly video on playpickleball.com's YouTube channel. So there's a new video that comes out every Wednesday. Go check out playpickleball.com on YouTube. And you could also find that on playpickleball.com on the web. But we put out a video, how to play pickleball in 5 minutes, and basically explaining. And there are plenty of people that really had great feedback. And then there's still a handful of people that were like, why is this sport so confusing? Mm-hmm. And the thing about when you consider scoring, when you consider switching sides, when you consider that we start at 0-0-2 and then it moves to 0-0-1 to 0-0, you know, like there's kind of these nuances when you're first learning the game, and there's already enough confusion, I think, around even learning pickleball. Obviously, once you learn, it's like riding a bike. You're not going to forget. But there's already kind of this thing that turns people off from pickleball that it's kind of feels a little confusing with the rules. So if now we're adding confusion with paddle regulations and there's ambiguity with the serve, it just does. It makes it confusing for newcomers.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so wild.
Another thing that was brought up in this is that the Courtney was saying that Courtney Johnson, the head ref for MLP, was saying that the serve moving forward in MLP will no longer be challengeable. What do you think about that?
I mean, here's the reality, and I've said this before. Every time we've had a serving topic, I've said this. I feel for the refs. It's very hard to judge. It's very hard to say, yes, that was contacted below the waist. Yes, the angle of their wrist was below the paddle. Like, it's happening so fast. I'm sorry, it's just really hard to judge. And so, you know, even this last MLP, seeing how many challenges, like how much time they spent going back and forth on that, I bet they're probably like, we don't want to have to spend this much time at every match trying to judge people's serves.
Yeah. I mean, it is an issue because the issue is enforceability. Like, how is this?
It's not enforceable.
Yeah. Are the rules enforceable, and how easy is it to judge? You know how you fix this?
Drop serve.
Go to the drop serve. That's right. I don't really want that to happen. I maybe would get used to it, but if they're not going to regulate paddles and they're not going to make paddles less hot, and they're just going to let paddles continue to be hot, serves are going to become more and more of a weapon. And I think the only issue I could see with the drop serve would be, would people start pressing the line? And like, I know in a drop serve, you can't throw the ball up, you know, are people going to start like manipulating the drop of the serve? I don't know, but I do think it's more enforceable.
Yeah, it's definitely more enforceable to me. And I think that's where I'm at, is I'm like, I don't want to see it either. But at the same time, if I'm having Will Howells serve at me like that,
what would you think, because of, for the sake of viewership, I have noticed that there are certain things in pickleball in the past where there's been different rules. For example, the let rule. There's different rules between the amateurs and the pros.
Yeah.
What would you think about just the professional pros having to drop the ball? Mm. And amateurs can still do their thing? Or would you like it to be like across the board? Everyone goes to a drop serve.
You almost want it across the board, just so there's, it's just across the board. Like, I can see it being like that. But I almost feel like if we're going to change a rule, like let's just change a rule and quit having so many like, oh, if you're pro, it's this, if it's this tour, it's this, if it's, it's just so much of that already.
Yep, for sure. I don't know. I think that we're going to continue to have issues until this gets sorted out, but it needs to get sorted out. For those of you that are watching, if you're curious about what a drop serve is, we do have on the YouTube channel I mentioned at playpickleball.com's YouTube channel, there is a video that we made a while back. I believe it's called Serving 101. It goes through the kind of the rules between a serve and then also a drop serve, basically where you drop the ball, let it bounce off the ground before you serve the ball. So feel free to check that out if you're interested in learning more about what that is. But I think that about wraps it up for me. Do you want to move on to the next one or do you have any last thoughts on the serve?
No, I want to move on to the next one because it's kind of on the same subject of rules and things that are honestly, in my opinion, kind of dumb. So I'm excited to see what you think. So in New York, they also enforced another kind of new rule and everyone was calling it the 25% rule. And so basically what this is it has to do with calling balls out. Now, I don't know if we've ever technically talked about this on the podcast, but you guys know, especially if you've played pickleball, like the rule is if the actual ball, any part of the ball is touching the line, then it's out. Meaning like if you're looking at the ball from a certain angle, it can change how you perceive it being in or out, right? Depending on your perspective. That's why, you know, in good faith, there's been this saying where it's when in doubt, it's not out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in New York City, they enforced this new rule where it was if 25% or more of the ball is over the line,
hovering
over the line from an overhead view, then it's in.
Right.
What the heck do you think about that?
I think what they're trying to do, I don't think they're doing a great job. What they're trying to do is they're trying to say oftentimes exactly what you said before, you know, the ball can be slightly out and look in. And what we have found is that if the ball is 25% hovering over the line, most likely it's in. And if it's anything more than that or less than that, then it's most likely out. I think one of the issues is now it's the discretion. Are you placing the camera in the same place every time? Because
I'm like, where's the overhead camera?
Because it's my understanding is that the camera wasn't straight overhead. It wasn't on the ground, it was kind of like up in the middle and like angled down. And it's just like, I don't know. We are overcomplicating it.
Overcomplicating it majorly. I was laughing because there's a bunch of comments on this post and people are like, oh dang, like mine was 27% or like mine was like 24.3%. Like people are just like going to town on it because it's like, we are really making this way too hard.
Yeah, I think that it's like, it does, like, what does it do? Like, we already have a problem with people hooking.
Right.
You know, we already have a problem with people, like making terrible line calls. And now we're giving this, like, 25%, 75% rule.
This person's like, 24.25, sorry, it's out.
Yeah. It's like, come on, man.
Like, what the heck? I just feel like if you're a pro on tour and you see that, you're like, what in the actual?
At the rate we're going, it's going to be like, if you're playing MLP, it's 30%.
Yeah.
If you're playing the PPA, 20%.
Like, we're all bringing our protractors to the pickleball
APP,
court.
10%.
Oh my gosh. I cannot. Like,
that's the rate we're going at. And we got to fix like kind of the ambiguity. And I don't know how this simplifies it at all.
No, it makes it way harder. And again, I'm like, you never have a camera directly over the ball. Like, I think in my mind for pros, you really need to have a direct camera on every line.
But then like, even if you do have a camera directly over the ball, what if one ref
23%
is like, I think that's about 23%. And the other ref's like, nah, it's about 27.
Dude, it's dumb.
This creates more confusion.
It does. Again, totally unenforceable at some point.
Like, I think one of the biggest problems, I think, is that we still are using cameras at like 240 frames per second.
I know. We're still using a camera that looks like it was shot off of a Motorola phone in 2008. I don't understand why the cameras are so bad.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess we're exaggerating, but
I don't know.
I think, yeah, it does become difficult, especially one of the issues that they had in the previous MLP was there was a challenger game and a girl hit like an ATP and then the ball was clearly out, but via the 25% rule or 75% rule, they reversed it and called it in. And it was like a game deciding ATP.
Oh my gosh, and what a mess.
The problem, even when you're hitting an ATP, is the ball like barely touches the ground, you know, like it's, and there's zero compression at all. And it's very hard to even see where the ball contacts the ground because it's, I don't know. There's so many factors that make this, honestly, it's clear as mud now. You know what I'm saying? So like, it doesn't clear things
terrible.
Up.
I would love to know what you guys think. Like I said, these comments were cracking me up, but like, honestly, what do you guys think about that rule? But also like, if you had to come up with a solution for the terrible out call situation that we're seeing on the pro level, like what would you say is a good solution?
Yeah, I would say, guys, if you're watching, I give you full permission to play commissioner of the PPA Tour. And when it comes to all these things, paddle regulations, serving, line calls, obviously things that need to get cleaned up, how would you clean them up?
Yeah.
Let us know in the comments.
Yeah.
We would love to know. And also, guys, as we've said before, please leave any questions that you want us to answer in future podcasts. Feel free to put those in the comments as well. We'd love to get to those and answer your questions. And lastly, however you're consuming this podcast, whether it be on YouTube or on Spotify, we really appreciate for you to leave us a rating and review. The more that we get of those, the bigger we can take this podcast. We do want it to grow. We do want to start bringing on awesome guests and things like that too. So please leave a review if it's 5 stars.
Only 5 stars. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us on today's episode, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.